It's time for Eco Talk with host Betsy Rosenberg.
She'll be great. She's a very smart, capable person who knows exactly what took place and will lay out the facts. And that's what the American people want to see.
I had a dream the other night. Now, in my dream, our national bird had become the ostrich.
Welcome to Eco Talk, where we green the red and blue states, one show at a time, sound solutions for a healthier planet, and no shortage of things to talk about as our environment changes in not all bad ways. There's lots of encouraging news, and we cover it all here on the program that is your green radio home for all things ecological, and it really is a topic, an area that covers everything, so I hope you appreciate the fact that we go boldly where no other show dares to go, and we keep going and deeper and wider and cover the issues that I think you want to hear more about. Actually, I sometimes say this is the show that I wanted to hear, never did as a consumer, and that's why we created it, so I hope you agree. Our first guest is New York Times correspondent Andy Revkin. He's been covering the environmental beat in a very bold way, especially global warming issues, and he was first on Eco Talk when he broke the story about how NASA has been silencing its scientists, one in particular, and now how he is being intimidated a bit. We'll tell you where that's coming from. We'll also check in with Brian Hoos from the Coral Reef Alliance. The coral reefs, as you probably know, are in danger because of global warming. Well, there's new information that is even more disturbing. And as usual, though, we're going to talk about what can be done, what must be done. Then we're going to lighten up a bit and talk to Jennifer Roberts. She's the author of several books on how to green your home. The latest, Good Green Kitchen. Something that I'm particularly interested in, having moved to a very old house recently. We want to update it, but we want to do it in a green and groovy way. We're going to find out all about what kind of countertops might be better than things like granite and marble that all the best homes where I live in Marin County have them, and all the homeowners show them off very proudly. But if they knew what we knew about that extractive process of taking those beautiful marble and granite slabs out of the earth, well, they might pick something that's just as beautiful but made from recycled glass, for instance. Going to get to that, but first want to welcome Andy Revkin, who has been kind enough to come back and tell us about the latest brouhaha. Unable to dispute overwhelming evidence that climate change is in fact an urgent reality, some politicians have now resorted to shooting the messengers by attacking the integrity of scientists and even journalists. Well, Andy's going to tell us about NASA's attempts to not only silence scientists on behalf of the Bush administration, but how his books, his children's books, in fact, have drawn the ire of one notorious Oklahoma senator. Stranger than fiction, huh, Andy?
Well, strange indeed, at any rate.
Mm. Now, you, of course, just for those of our listeners who didn't catch it, originally were the one who broke the story about Jim Hansen, NASA's top climate scientist for some 30 years, who had been speaking out, how dare he, in public audiences about the urgency, the need to act quickly, that we had maybe 10 years, and he's been saying that for a couple of years, like a lot of scientists have, to turn things around, and how NASA got a little bit concerned about that and tried to silence him, and he refused, and he has continued to talk about it. What resulted from your reporting on that?
Well, right after the second story ran, just a week after the first one, the administrator of NASA, Michael Griffin, issued what he called a statement of scientific openness to all 19,000 scientists and engineers and other employees of the agency. And basically he said not only was it okay to talk about your work, but it was okay to talk about the implications of your science as well, which was really unprecedented, especially the last in this administration, but generally, scientists in government employment are not supposed to talk about the policy implications of what they do, and that clearly was what Jim Hansen had been doing, and now Griffin said he has the right to do that as long as he hangs his NASA coat on a hook before he goes to the microphone, and since then they've been actually developing a policy that a written sort of a guidebook for how NASA employees should or should not talk to people. And that's moved ahead somewhat. It's still a little unclear, but the thing that happened substantively, regardless of the written policy, is that a lot of government scientists really felt much freer to talk about things after the stories ran than they did before.
Now, when Dr. Hansen was on EcoTalk, he talked about how he felt it was his duty working for NASA, where NASA's mission statement, as he said, was to understand and protect our home planet. That's
right.
A commitment that they're supposed to adhere to, and that's the latest news, that has now been eliminated from NASA's mission statement. Oops.
Yeah, this happened kind of in the dark of night, at least as far as most people at NASA were concerned. When the budget and related documents were given to Congress in February, at headquarters at NASA, there were a few people who rewrote things to take out the phrase understand and protect the home planet from the mission statement. And that's kind of gotten, the awareness of that has grown around NASA just recently as people kind of have been, they look to the mission statement. It's not just sort of some namby-pamby little set of words. When you're a NASA scientist and you're trying to propose a line of work, you usually, in fact, you almost always in your proposal refer to the mission statement because that's really the guiding principles that the agency is trying to pursue. And when you take that away, as some scientists said to me on the record in the paper the other day, you're really constraining what they're going to look at. And when you say no home planet, that kind of means go to the moon and Mars, which is what the administration's been pushing for lately.
This would be hysterical if it wasn't so serious. I mean, it's ludicrous. Obviously, the concern is talking about climate change. Heaven forbid.
Well, it's a big chunk of what NASA has done. Since the 70s, they've been involved in environmental monitoring. And first it was Landsat, and then it was various weather satellites. And the ozone hole was discovered because of NASA. And then climate change, sure, a lot of the basic measurements are done by NASA. And it's not as if all of that is stopping. You know, they still spend hundreds of millions of dollars a year on satellites and things. But the programs are being cut back sharply. The budget, as many scientists said to me as I was reporting the story, they said, you know, the words are important, but look at the budget to really understand where the priorities are. And clearly there's been a shift toward, again, resuming manned spaceflight and going out there instead of studying back here.
Now, you know, one of the things I like when the space shuttles go up, most often an astronaut will look down on Earth and say something like, you know, she looks more fragile than ever, you know, that really thin layer of atmosphere, as we saw certainly in Gore's movie depicted from the moon in that famous picture of Earth, is looking more and more fragile all the time. Are those astronauts going to be muzzled now from sharing their views?
Astronauts are kind of an interesting breed. I've never found one who's reluctant to talk. I mean, some of them are very much by the book kind of people. But in fact, when I wrote my first book on the environment, The Burning Season, way back in, came out in 1990, I interviewed one of the astronauts who was one of the people who first saw the Amazon on fire, you know, from space. And he was profoundly transformed at that time. That was also the first time we were really discussing global warming as a threat. He was moved by all that so much that later when he came back to Earth, he began to speak around the universities and other venues about the perils of global warming way back then. So I think there is something powerful about looking at Earth from space. That's where you see the totality of what's going on, and that's where you see the evidence that we're increasingly looking at a human-altered planet.
And maybe when they're up there in space, they're outside the affected field area. They're off Earth, so they're exempt, right, from being muzzled, perhaps?
Entitled
to form their own views.
Right, especially, and once they're, you know, in the civilian world, a lot of them have been very outspoken about things.
Okay, speaking of spoken words, Senator James Inhofe, who has called human-induced climate change the greatest hoax ever perpetrated on mankind, and whenever I do interviews with these right-wing talk show hosts, they always quote him, oh, that great man with egg all over his face, with more coming every hour. He's on your case. He doesn't like the fact that you're selling a book about global warming, a book called The North Pole Was Here. We interviewed you on that about 4 months ago. So it's a great book, and it's on global warming, but it's really delivered in a very sort of fun sort of way, using some interesting stories for children, and it looks at changes in the Arctic in a way that really can appeal to the whole family. What offense could he possibly have found there?
Well, I talked to his staffers last week. It was a couple of his senior communications people who were complaining publicly about this, and he hadn't read the book when he made the first on-the-record complaints about it. Since then, he told me he has read the book.
Or at least looked at the great pictures.
Yeah, maybe. Well, he thought the title implicitly was alarmist. The North Pole was here. But as I said to him, if you had read the book, you would understand that has multiple meanings. It's not just about global warming and the fact that the sea ice
busted.
It's about the fact that we're transforming the Arctic in many ways as it becomes a more human-invaded place, and that the Arctic of our history is this sort of untouchable, icy place is going away.
Now, go ahead. Sorry. We just have a minute left. I have to just ask you about the irony that the party of an administration that has paid journalists to push its policies would take a stance criticizing you for somehow trying to benefit, even though you write for the New York Times, by selling a book. That that's somehow a conflict of interest.
Well, it's also a book co-published by the New York Times, and I'm just expanding my journalism to include the next generation, the people, the kids who are facing they're the ones whose climate we're fiddling with now. So if I'm not writing for them, I'm not doing my job, and this is just a way to expand my journalism.
Okay, and we're going to expand our conversation into the next segment. So thanks for being with us, Andy Revkin with the New York Times. Whenever I see his byline, I make sure I read that story first, because our environment, of course, is the big story. And, of course, that covers so much. And we're going to continue to cover so much for you here on EcoTalk. Stay with us. Tell me where the center.